This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
It's coming up on 6:13 on this Friday morning now with part one of the Morning Ag Show. We join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures yesterday, Thursday, off the Board of Trade, saw corn closing with gains. Soybean markets ended Thursday with double-digit gains, and the wheat market weakened on Thursday. First off, corn closed yesterday, Thursday's session, with a 2.25 to 3.5 cent gain, adding to Wednesday's corrective move. USDA reported 1.371 million metric tons of corn sold for the week of Thanksgiving. That was in line with the pre-report estimates and 251% ahead of the same week last year. The top purchasing nation was Mexico, followed by an unknown destination with 656,900 and 351,400 metric tons, respectively. Shipments from the weekly update were 1 million metric tons more for the first time this marketing year, then pushed the marketing year total to 10.373 million metric tons. Milo export sales were reported at 238,609 metric tons. That was down from 355,000 metric tons last week and well above the 19,000 metric tons last year. Accumulated sorghum shipments are 1.275 million metric tons. That's the largest for the first 13 weeks of a marketing year since 2014-2015. The November production forecast from Stats Canada has 2020 Canadian corn output at 13.563 million metric ton. That's up by 1.2% from last year. Soybean futures posted double-digit gains on Thursday. The 15.5 cent gain for March and the 16.25 cent gain in May erased the last 2 days' moves. Monday's drop still has futures in the red for the week, however. Soybean meal futures ended yesterday with a $3.30 to $4.40 ton move higher. Bean oil futures led the complex with a 2 to 3% gain. The weekly export sales report Thursday signaled that 406,934 metric tons of beans were sold for the week of Thanksgiving. That was at the bottom of the range of the pre-report estimates and a marketing year as sales to unknown were net reduced by 539,100 metric tons. Chinese importers also canceled 132,900 metric tons for a net increase of 476,900. China has 9.935 million metric tons of unshipped sales on the books, with a record 19.7 million metric tons shipped through the first 13 weeks of this marketing year. USDA reported 167,847 metric tons of bean meal sales on the week. For soybean oil, the weekly export sales report showed only 2,484 metric tons booked. Bean oil shipments were a marketing year high of 28,674 metric tons, pushing the marketing year-to-date shipment to 100,000 more metric tons. Canadian canola production was estimated at 18,720 million metric tons from Stats Canada November forecast. That's 4.5% of a drop from 2019. Stats Canada sees 2020 soybean output at 6.359 million metric tons. That's up from 6.145 last year. And the front month wheat futures turned south on Thursday for inside day givebacks. Chicago wheat was down by 3 to 6. Kansas City wheat down by 4 to 5. And Minneapolis wheat was up by 0.25 cent to down 2.5 cents. USDA's weekly export sales update showed 446,384 metric tons of wheat booked for the week ending last Thursday, Thanksgiving. That was in line with expectations, but down 44% week over week. Wheat shipments were up 32% on the week with 451,000 metric tons. Marketing year-to-date wheat exports were reported at 12.372 million metric ton, which is even with last year's pace. Japan's Department of Agriculture purchased 126,961 metric tons of wheat in their weekly tender, with 87,110 from the United States. Stats Canada released the November estimate for the 2020 crop output, showing 35.183 million metric tons of all wheat. That's up 7.5% from last year, led by a 1.5 million metric ton bump for Durham and a 1 million metric ton bump for winter wheat there. So again, recapping, your mostly higher grain futures despite the wheat market on Thursday. Corn for December gained 3.5 cents yesterday to 422.5. March corn up 2.75, 426.5. May corn at Thursday's close up 2.25, 428.75. Beans on the January contract had a nice gain of 15.25 at the Thursday close. That's up to 11.68 and a quarter now. March beans up by 15.5 at 11.70 and a quarter. May beans up 16.25 at 11.68 and a quarter, the same as the January contract. Wheat, on the other hand, was lower, with December Chicago wheat down by 6.25, 571.75. March Chicago down 4, 584.5. May Chicago wheat on Thursday down 3.5, 587.75. Kansas City December wheat down 5.5 at 545. Minnesota December wheat up by only 0.25, 540.5. Oats had a nice day as well, just like soybeans. December oats up 9.25, 303.75. March oats up 4.5 at $3.75. May oats up 4.5 at 302.25. Finally, your soybean meal for December gained $3.30, 392.80, and soybean oil for December a big gain of $1.21 to 38.68. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Thursday's Port of Grain Price and Trend prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Hill and Country grain prices are higher on Thursday afternoon on rumors of Chinese purchases of corn and soybeans. In northern Western Illinois, Country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 3 to 5 cents at 392 to 423. Soybeans are 15 to 18 cents higher at 1118 to 1163. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 2 to 3 cents at 406 to 433. Soybeans are 14 to 17 cents higher at 1145 to 1174. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were up 5 to 7 cents at 407 to 444. Soybeans are 15 to 19 cents higher at 1147 to 1190. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 15 to 18 cents higher at 1175 to 1188. Basis was steadied up 3 at 7 over to 20 over the January. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 390 to 403 a ton, up $2.40 to $4.40 a ton, with basis unchanged at option to 13 over the January. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 3 cents higher at 422 to 452, with basis unchanged at 500 to 25 over the March. Illinois River barge loading elevators coated to produce the corn bids 1 to 10 cents higher, 426 to 429, with basis mixed at 100 to 2 over the March. Soybeans ended up 12 to 16 cents at 1163 to 1167, with basis mixed at 500 to 1 under the January. East St. Louis barge loading to my placer produced the corn bids 6 to 7 cents higher, 451 to 454. These elevators raise their soybean prices 18 cents, quotations 11.91 to 11.93. Soft wheat closed down 4 cents at 6.14 to 6.15. Milo ended the day 3 cents higher at 4.97 to 4.98. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 3.95 to 4.27, soybeans at 11.18 to 11.62. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 4.07 to 4.30. Soybeans at 11.51 to 11.85. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 4.13 to 4.55. Soybeans at 11.54 to $12. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock report here on a Friday morning. At the end of Thursday's trade, live cattle futures were off of their low, but still down by triple digits, and hogs also closed Thursday lower. Again, the front months and cattle ended the session down by 70 to 87 cents. Feeders also came back in the afternoon, but still ended the day $1.22 to $2 lower. That was due to the gains in the grain complex. The feeder cattle index was at 139.44 on Wednesday, down 43 cents. USDA reported Thursday cash sales were between 107 and 111. The bulk of activity for the week has been near the $110 mark, with $172 to $174 in the beef. Wholesale boxed beef prices were lower again Thursday, with a $1.70 drop in choice and a $3.02 drop in selects. Choice rib primals were quoted at 514.80 in the afternoon report. USDA's weekly updated for beef bookings was at 13,747 metric ton. That was well above the 528 metric tons from the same week last year. Beef commitments are at 916,982 metric ton, and that's a record. USDA estimates the week-to-date cattle slaughter through Thursday at 481,000 head. That's 1,000 head higher than this time last year. Lean hog futures closed with a 10 to 95 cent loss on Thursday, with February the weakest contract. The lean hog index was back up 4 cents to 66.71 on the Tuesday report. USDA's national average base hog price for Thursday was at 55.88, down 81 cents. Pork cutout futures remained thinly traded and fell 27 to 67 cents on the day. National pork carcass cutout values from the USDA were at 76.45 in the afternoon report, down by $3.41. Hams fell by $13.58 on the day. Bellies were down $7.86. USDA reported a three-week high for pork export sales. The 31,269 metric tons booked on the week was up 65% on the week and 2% over the last year. The top purchaser with China, with 24% of the total. China's year-to-date pork commitments are at 36.5% of the total of 2.014 million metric ton. USDA's federally inspected hog slaughter for the week through Thursday was at 1.967 million head. That trails last year by 19,000 head. So recapping your lower livestock futures from Thursday off the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, December live cattle were down $1.10 yesterday at 109.60. February live cattle down $1.35, 112.57. April live cattle down 87 cents, 116.30. Feeder cattle for January closed at 139.80, down $2. March feeders down $1.65 at 139.32. April feeders finished at 140.70. down $1.40. Lean hogs December were at 66.02, down 32 cents. February lean hogs at the Thursday close were at 66.92, down 95 cents. April lean hogs down 40 cents at 70.47. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday afternoon livestock report. Starting the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculates that your 200-pound pork carcass traded 81 cents lower, in a range of $50 to $57, with a weighted average carcass price of $55.88. From the Illinois Direct Sow Port, slaughter sow prices were weak, with moderate demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 to 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $27 to $30, 4 to 5 weighted $29 to $33, 5 to 6 weighted $33 to $37, and over 600 pounds $35 to $40. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gelts country buying points were steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $35 to $41. Packer receipts for barrels and gelts totaled $20,260. In the direct cattle trade, the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers on a dress basis traded at 172 to 174. Choice heifers on a dress basis traded at 172 to 177.60. From the National Daily Pork Plant Port, trading for retail and processing cuts was established, with 365 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $79.86, which is $2.78 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcass $240.89, which is $2.51 lower, while select carcasses were $222.95, which is 13 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 120,000 compared to 100,000 last week and 122,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated 492,000 compared to 2,000 last week and 497,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Pros Drainage, by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, and by Farm Credit Illinois. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here in your latest national ag news for your Friday morning. A new COVID stimulus package gaining some traction in Congress with limited bipartisan support includes billions in new help for agriculture. The stimulus framework at just over $900 billion is billed by Speaker Pelosi and top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer as a starting point for bipartisan bicameral talks after months of failed effort to pass a new COVID legislation. Included is $26 billion for farm and nutritional aid, key for crop and livestock producers and those in the biofuel industry suffering from months of pandemic-related losses. Plus, there's $10 billion earmarked for rural broadband. At the American Farm Bureau Federation, Executive Director Dale Moore had this take.
We are encouraged that, you know, Congress is coming together, you know, in a bipartisan fashion, at least it appears to be bipartisan fashion, to include agriculture in this package. And I think importantly that there seems to be also a bipartisan desire to get this package wrapped up as Congress, you know, gets closer and closer, December 11th.
That is when a earlier temporary spending bill keeping the government open in the absence of regular agency spending bills will expire. And Moore says agriculture's needs are continuing to mount.
Well, it's pretty clear that the pandemic is not slowing down. It appears to be accelerating, certainly in this country. And we keep hoping and praying that, you know, we're going to see that light at the end of the tunnel get brighter and brighter. But until we get there, there's a lot of work that we need to do.
That work includes addressing both economic losses and new illness outbreaks at some processing plants.
And so getting this one done and hopefully getting 2020 wrapped up on a high note relative to the assistance that folks need is certainly important.
But the latest proposal is nowhere near a done deal. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has pushed for smaller, less budget-busting deals and doesn't appear ready to support the latest framework. In other news from Capitol Hill, the Hagstrom Report says the full House Republican Conference ratified committee-ranking members for the upcoming 117th Congress. Pennsylvania Representative Glenn Thompson is now the ranking member on the House Ag Committee. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says, quote, Congressman Thompson is ready to lead his colleagues on an issue he knows best. He comes from a family of dairy farmers and has lived in rural Pennsylvania his whole life, so he understands what needs to get done to take American agriculture to the next level. Thompson, who replaces the retiring Michael Conaway, says the challenges ahead of us are considerable, but we will continue to put farm families first. National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Vice President of Governmental Affairs, Ethan Lane, issued a statement praising the vote by Republicans' steering committee. Cattle producers in Pennsylvania and across the country are well represented by Congressman Thompson, Lane says. From his long-standing track record of bipartisan legislative victories to his work mentoring the next generation of agriculture, GT, as he's called, does it all. Lane also says that the Pennsylvania Republican is an exemplary choice to guide the committee for years to come, and they are excited to work with him and his team in the next Congress. Outgoing Senate Ag Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow applauded the House of Representatives' passage of the U.S. Grain Standards Reauthorization Act of 2020. The legislation is ready to be signed into law by President Trump. The U.S. Grain Standards Reauthorization Act of 2020 passed out of the Senate Ag Committee in June and the full Senate in November. I'm pleased the 2020 Grain Standards Reauthorization Act has quickly moved through both chambers of Congress to deliver certainty and predictability to the federal grain inspection system, Roberts says. I'm hopeful that President Trump swiftly signs this legislation into law to ensure Americans can uphold its reputation as a dependable exporter of quality grain. Stabenow also says the legislation provides much-needed stability. Now more than ever, we must provide certainty for farmers, she says. We are one step closer to enacting this bipartisan legislation and protecting our credibility as a reliable producer of high-quality crops. The Grain Standards Reauthorization Act of 2020 has broad ag industry support from both national and state ag groups. Outgoing House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson says American grain farmers participate in a competitive world, and foreign grain buyers should be confident in our inspection process. In the latest word from President-elect Joe Biden, he told the New York Times this week that Democrats forgot about rural America, However, in the same interview, he says that residents of rural America will, quote, not be left behind. Biden talked about the future efforts of Democrats to win the support of rural American residents and the 74 million people who voted for Trump in the election. Quote, you know, it really does go to the issue of dignity, how you treat people, Biden says. I think those people feel forgotten, and I think we forgot them. While Democrats claimed the cities and suburbs to capture the Oval Office, the party fell even further behind in large parts of northern battleground states. Democrats lost the House seats in the Midwest, while Democrats once considered serious challengers to Republican incumbents in Iowa, Kansas, Montana, and North Carolina Senate races all lost. Fox News says continued losses in the country are putting pressure on Biden to reverse the trend, especially as failure to accomplish that will make it harder to meet his goals of curbing climate change. And in latest news from the USDA, sign-up deadlines for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program are coming up in 1 week on December 11th, and the American Farm Bureau is saying the number of dairy operations signed up is lower than expected. So far, only 7,846 operations have enrolled in the program, covering about 64 billion pounds of milk. Those numbers account for just under one-third of the total number of U.S. operations and the total volume of milk. Approximately 68% of the country's licensed operations with established production history have not signed up for the program. Next year's 7,846 operations enrolled is more than 23,000 fewer operations than signed up back in 2019, when 13,468 dairy farms enrolled in the program. The drop in 2020's dairy enrollment was due in part to somewhat positive expectations for the dairy industry going into this year. The low level of signups just days before the deadline is surprising, given the benefits of enrolling for next year. A rally in commodity prices may be helpful to many farmers, but it does make feed costs higher for dairy producers. The rising price of feed will squeeze the margins of dairy farmers, and that should make programs like the DMC more attractive to producers. Coverage is available from as low as $4 a hundredweight to as much as $9.50 per hundredweight. And net farm income, which is a broad measure of profit, is forecasted to increase by $36 billion to $119.6 billion this year. Those numbers come from the USDA's Economic Research Service. In inflation-adjusted 2020 dollars, net farm income is forecasted to increase by $35 billion. The fourth straight year, the income number has gone up. If the prediction comes true, net farm income in 2020 in inflation-adjusted terms would be at its highest level since 2013 and 32% above the 2000 through 2019 average of $90.6 billion. However, cash receipts for all commodities are forecasted to decrease by $3.2 billion to $366.5 billion. Direct government farm payments are forecasted at $46.5 billion, an increase of $24 billion in nominal terms. Total production expenses, including operator dwelling costs, are forecasted to decrease by $5.2 billion to $343.6 billion in 2020. Interest expenses, livestock, poultry expenses, and oil and fuel costs are all expected to decline, but fertilizer costs and net rent to landlords are both expected to increase. The Economic Research Service says the predicted increase is due to the supplemental and ad hoc disaster assistance for COVID-19 relief. Moving on now on this Friday to the latest State of Illinois Ag News. Crop insurance for next year's growing season includes a couple of new options for farmers to consider. The options are in addition to the normal crop insurance policies. The first was actually introduced in the 2020 season, SCO, or the Supplemental Coverage Option. The new one is ECO, or Enhanced Coverage Option. Here's how Illinois Extension's Gary Schnittke says ECO works.
ECO will offer farmers a coverage from either 90 to 95% down to 86%. Farmers can use that in conjunction with SCO to get coverage down to their coverage level of their selected product.
Now it's time to remember what all these acronyms mean. ECO can be used with either of the PCL or ARC Federal Safety Net programs. SCO is only available with PLC. ECO makes payments based on county yields. Most farmers take RP, or Revenue Protection Crop Insurance, and that's based off farm-level yields. Here's how all three would work together. RP makes up the difference in revenue lost up to the insured amount, let's say 80% at the farm level. SCO for PLC users only then covers losses from 80 to 86%. ECO covers losses from 86% to either 90 or 95%, depending on what the farmer wants to buy, according to Schnittke.
By the way, if I were buying it, I would buy ECO and maybe skip SCO. ECO is going to pay on a more of a band than SCO would.
The other thing, however, is that ECO can be pretty expensive. For example, in Champaign County, it would cost $7 to $8 an acre for coverage to 90% and about $21 to 95%. Those numbers are in addition to the regular crop insurance costs. In other ag news from around the state, this week the Illinois Soybean Association Board of Directors seated two newly elected at-large directors. They are Jeff O'Connor of Kankakee and Brady Holst of Plymouth. O'Connor earned a bachelor's degree in ag economics from the U of I. He's a certified crop advisor and has recently earned a sustainability specialist certification. In addition, O'Connor has spent 25 years serving as Kankakee County as a director with the Soil and Water Conservation District. He routinely opens his farm to legislators, overseas grain buyers, college students, and the urban community in order to share the story of modern agriculture. O'Connor says he most looks forward to contributing to the board's efforts around conservation and sustainability. Holst attended the University of Illinois as well, where he studied agriculture and biological engineering. He is an American Soybean Association Young Leader Program participant, and he believes it's in his background in science, technology, engineering, and math, along with a knowledge of how effectively to market a message that makes him well-equipped to serve on the ISA's board. The Illinois Soybean Association checkoff and membership programs represent more than 43,000 soybean growers in Illinois. The checkoff funds market development, soybean innovation and profitability efforts, issues analysis, communications, and education. Membership and advocacy efforts support Illinois soybean farmers in local areas in Springfield and in Washington, D.C. And the Illinois Farm Bureau is readying for the organization's first virtual annual meeting this weekend. Mark Gebhartz of the IFB says plenty of work has been done as part of the resolutions process.
There's a lot of focus on trying to protect business, small business, including agriculture, from some of the liability concerns around COVID. That certainly has been a focal point, as one might imagine. A lot of talk about road commissioners, both township and county commissioners, trying to make sure, again, that there's clarity in how we work and interact with those folks. Dairy continues to be a focal point in some of the dairy policy, and also crop protection. We continue to make sure that, again, there's good stewardship here as we use our crop protectants. There's been concern, as you know, around dicamba in the past. That has not gone away, and so some of the policy submittals have tried to focus on that. And then there's also a recommendation to our board that will be considered, encouraging the board to look at a livestock working group to continue to look at the pricing issues and the price disparity issues associated with our livestock industry. So the delegates, again, have done a great job as we've operated virtually.
And the organization's virtual business meeting is set for tomorrow, Saturday. Moving along now into local ag news here on your Friday, a team of horticulture educators received the University of Illinois Extension's Team Excellence Award for collaborative work around the Good Growing Educational Program. Good Growing is a multifaceted media platform featuring weekly print media, blog, podcasts, videos, and webinars as a comprehensive source of extension information. Chris Enroth, Andrew Holsinger, Kenneth Johnson, and Katie Parker developed the program's content. Andrew Holsinger, the extension horticulture educator serving our local area of Christian, Jersey, Macoupin, and Montgomery County, he provides the horticulture education for gardeners of all ages and skill levels in our area. He also holds expertise in pruning techniques, plant identification, tree fruit culture, and using technological methods for teaching. Additionally, he is responsible for offering leadership to the training and educational needs of the Master Gardener program in our local area. Along with this award, Holsinger has also won many other awards for his work with the U of I Extension. The other three individuals on the team included Chris Enroth, who serves Henderson, Knox, McDonough, and Warren County, Kenneth Johnson, that serves Calhoun, Cass, Green, Morgan, and Scott County, and Katie Parker, who serves Adams, Brown, Hancock, Pike, and Schuyler County. And if you'd like to read more on that story or other stories that I mentioned today about state agriculture, just go to our website, wsmiradio.com/agriculture. And in other items you can find there on our website under the Ag tab, don't forget that today at 11 this morning is the Grain Farm Income Outlook with Risk Management Rental Implications webinar. It's given by U of I Extension and will be covering the levels of cash rental, the above-trend yields that will likely be needed to keep the level of income that we've seen over the last few years, and risk management. Also, the webinar will be given by Gary Schnittke along with Dale Latz of the University of Illinois, and they'll be covering the multiple new tools of crop insurance this coming next year that I mentioned in the story earlier this morning with Gary Schnittke. Again, that webinar is today at 11. If you'd like to find out about this webinar or more webinars, you can find that information out at our website as well, wsmiradio.com/ag. And that concludes your Ag News here on this Friday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at wsmi@wsmiradio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, December 4th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.